We're going to kick off the Open Mic with Patricia Walsh.
Thank you, Michelle. It's called Restoration. What a dangerous liaison we breed, coolly intending an innocent's fall. Harboring the weak, hiding of want, to see her trip, slide, and die. Achieving everything that passes muster, feeling under dangerous or unlethal still. A half-life of sorts becomes distressing, a topic for censure despite feelings. Some golden veil reneges on its promise, under the microscope there hangs a bower of illicit romance, too young for experience. The act carved seconds, not a surveyed yard. Strange fish, I believe, make interesting reading. The arbiters up their globular fruits. Every day boring, but scintillating. Undercut the illicit makeup under the bed. Content for dreams for now on silent disco. Forgotten decorum keeping in check. The promises made, the war of discipline. Trump cards of age mercifully unfold. Need for long talk never settles matters. Shaming ourselves in a reflected eye. Overdressing for church in a borrowed outfit. Orderly to fault, stopping briefly for secrets.
Colin
Scully,
please.
I was reading a book there last summer about the early Irish manuscripts, and I was also thinking about 1916, so I came up with this poem, which is it's taking some lines from some of the manuscripts were quoted in the book. So it's a kind of parfum poem with some lines from the Battle of Moytura and from Eulogy of Columbkill from the Book of the Dun Cow. So I'm a bit nervous about this because there seems to be an awful lot of expertise about myths and legends and Irish stuff here tonight, but here goes. It's actually probably timely because Patrick's Day isn't next week, and it mentions St. Patrick in the first couple of lines anyway. It's called Lament for Padraic Pearse. Would that I were young again upon that shore that is the shore of life. But I am nearly done with one story to tell. I tell this island's tale from a braver time, when Niall was king and brought Patrick by force into this land. Columbkill came after Naden and All Saints, and golden page followed golden page of history, until deep rancor came upon us, when Gael fought Gael, and no high king could be decided on. Then Dermot called on the great lord, Henry of England. He in turn employed the Normans, who dwelt in Wales, perfecting the arts of chivalry. They had obtained the four treasures, the stone of destiny, that screamed beneath the true high king, the spear of Brian Ru, the sword of light, and the dogless cauldron. The Normans came in a great fleet to seize it from the Gaels. They burned their boats on the beach so as to have no thought of escape. And from the smoke of the great fire, it was thought that they had descended upon the country in a cloud. They made an alliance with Leinster, and Dermot MacMurrough gave his daughter Aoife to Strongbow in marriage, and a son was born to them, Ireland. They fought the Gael at Achill Oar and were victorious, and the Gaels retired into the western edges of the island, Kerry, Clare, Donegal, but Strongbow lost his arm in the battle, so that the Bishop of Dublin gave him a silver arm. He was now unfit to be king, and the kingdom was given over to the Earls of Desmond and Meath, and to those sons of England whom they had adopted. But the Normans oppressed the people, and allowed the English to extract tribute from them. The Gaelic chiefs were made to carry firewood, and the dog, the king of the fairies, to build tower houses. The Norman lords did not grease the knives of their guests, and their breaths did not smell of ale. The people complained and called upon them to surrender the kingship. They asked for a respite of 7 centuries, which was granted under guarantees. but the Normans sent envoys to the land of the Saxon to raise an army. Henry, King of the Isles and of all the English, assembled his host from Wales westward. And they made a bridge of ships from Anglesey to Ireland. Never came to Ireland a host more horrible than that host. They held sway in the land for the agreed 700 years, destroying the old Gaelic ways, until Padraig Pearse raised the sword of light against them, in doing so losing his own life. The rampart of Niall was not silent. The great sorrow was not the lamentation of a single plain. A great cry was heard when we knew that Pearse was without life. How shall a fool tell of him, even old Scully? Now 100 years have gone since that last battle. We must remember Padraig passing, but it is a dangerous time. Once more we argue among ourselves. Beware those envious of power who might invite the help of allies from the east.
Verbs are hurting me, nouns are calling me names. My library of books have stopped reading because they block too much. They revise all their personal scratches in them and switch them for perfect Roman facts. Stern, strict, and cured. Logical, logical, logical. So much so that lullabies have awakened the babies. They echo not, calls, cries, but digital alarm sirens, narrow ear-piercing, asking questions, correcting and blotting the myth which they cross out and correct. Tipex and shut down the servers. Thanks.
I'm going to do two. The first one's very dark, the second one is going to be a little more uplifting, so.
This silence, the threat of poverty, stunned by numbness, what can we do? Father going away to try his luck. We don't know if he'll ever make it back. Little girl crying when he's gone, her longing unanswered. And mother standing alone, barely numb. What can we do? And who to share with? A listening ear needed. Helping hands, a caring heart, a shoulder strong to support. But everyone's down. This silence envelops the days grey and rainy, and mother is numb, cannot stand strong. Despair and guilt and sadness remain as all falls apart, unshared in this silence.
Second one, very different topic.
Lights along the lea. The dark cover of night envelops the city lights. I stop to watch the spiders in their magic webs, glittering against the street lamps between the steel bars of the banister along the bridge. The River Lee lies still, only a quiver reveals the mirage on the water, mirror of a grown age-old town, disguised in modern buildings and neon lights. Along the low concrete quay wall, I like to pause and lean over the rounded crown, admiring the river, this keeper of time. Its timeless reflection trembling in the slightest wind, ripples in the black silver surface, a film strip recording the pulse of Cork life. The lee not too long or too broad, with keys not too high nor too low, not too long to walk, and the nights alive with culture's beating heart. Looking back along this black silver band, reflecting the city night, it feels a little bit like Paris.
Yeah, Ben Burns.
A robin attacks his reflection in the glass of my bedroom window every morning. Thump, 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 thump. Is that me?
Our 5-word challenge winner.
This is a poem about a substance that everybody should all deal. It's called diesel. It was one of the smells of my childhood growing up on that County Clare farm. Mixed in with cut grass, it can still transport me back to chasing the gulls off the suddenly bared ground, conjuring vistas of shaven silage fields and tractors moving at top speed. It's one of the smells of work, mixed in with cement dust, that once again lands me on building sites, clothes soiled and reeking of it, people moving away from me when I was on the buses or the trains. Finally, it is the smell of the 20th century, not just for me, but for the whole of humanity. It fuels both food and war, and life would be nigh unmanageable without it. The city would smell unlike itself, and no other fuel could assume all the roles it has filled in our age.
We have Donna from the back there, Donna McCartan. Also, there's plenty of space up here if anyone does want to move closer to the microphone.
There's also a, as part of Shocked in the Game again, there's a channel reel on a festival going on in the library on Saturday afternoon. The music and poetry channel reel on. And to commemorate it, a poem of his and a poem of mine, there's a card on. In some hour on this Kurukshid on Kuru doing PC Shano Riordan a leg August on Sun PC are over. On Rod Granor Lesh, I mean Neil. Sean O'Riordan to be five lesh lesh on the size notes Latianga. I guess Shin on Tema Tom make live free and up. Kangle Adrin the Hanga show that num. Moran Lam Lam to Ken Talibar Be Asnavok it Vun. Ta Changa Ella in Akilat is there she lin be lum. The Rani doing Be Adru is a style to Shin o him. Ni more doing Dol in Akilat will slip vi Shin unut. No good for wood. The Yarman. Is good for Uts a shin. Ni velen reev lach agna, coffin dull, unut. Kenak bog fed ke Avraham to a Hyangesha that long. Who tied this knot between us, dear language, half mine? What's the use in handling you unless you are all mine? There's another tongue beside you, and she says to me, be mine. Caught between the two of you, we're separated since then. Now I must get close to you till I'm fully absorbed, or I'll be robbed of your refuge, and you'll be robbed of me. Half of mine to do won't do. I have to fully enter in, though you're a hard one to get around. Language half mine. Vul smin of tobin mintin agi shivsheg lea vernrechtena filiata vor grohiat vor vocal fin og fasa beda ter vernanamaka avec gan ocul avec gan aib Fak le tishkint, fak estre. Din a dour beda, gan anam gan gra. Is an lach ishkint, na lach ochul. Intin kreuter, change kreuter. Dertrugger tanga arsa I. An tanga is shinna than dish. Ach is I an tanga at a ta rin a heart a shot. Is I an tanga at a grilu morrieta. Ach is thresh blinta tru velike. A gamer clihi nab guchis. Nilak e dokas is noire grit through the corpus of cream. Mi hasib aon rash arish mar bukulin into the rule guard. Agus an muntor ag shkreak. It was you, it was you. Os koran ranga. I hate my tongue.
It's from translation. A sudden thought hit me as you were reading pieces of your poetry, your words, creation, a window opening, perhaps in your soul. To be without words is no problem. If nothing is understood, ignorance is bliss. A dummy, no love nor soul. It is the half understanding, half words, tortured mind and twisted tongue. They say it is an ancient language, the older one in the pair. But it is that strange tongue that rules this place. It is that strange tongue that governs me. And after pitiful years playing foreign games, nothing but pitiless shame races through. Standing again, a small boy in the orchard, and the teacher screeching, it was you, in front of all the class. I hate my tongue.
Thank you, Aron, and bring initial and Mags Creed.
Sorry, Mrs. Chris. After my 5-word dark little piece came out, I was locked up until the age of 18, but, and I had a pleasant experience, but this one is for not coming too much. Fresh peaches pulverized to dust. Early childhood interventions, methylized and rust. Systematic denudement, with each little trace of vanity. Fresh blossoms, prune them. I pluck each budding tree. Hand a moratorium for speaking out of turn. Hand quotidian, serve stale and brittle with milk turned. In this lake, a tiny face can just about see a reflection that's not vain. For one moment, a blotted coat feels free, tiggling ripples through unholy rain. So that was that. Yeah.
I think I should sing an Irish song.
I can. So that's our own poem from our own village. So.
Cosh nam lam kema in evla hera shavim sha mara dian am fias an iha kagin ekaila thorik machno shalom fenik is it den of mas muita is it geishtet bilita lbin gornom Nur chulan chat ik tak den ir Is glorn an ach ik tak le shins Le fuan aram de chrachan shliv Is nir vein lam man tro Ha le dar gnau dvar Mar ich yochach dar de kone nev Is ik rum ach rees an ihe Le dar ir thagadar gantror
Michael O'Callaghan in Irish. So, the form of our boss, a couple of video him, August on Laura Shaw. Awesome diach the wind way.
Quit.
Shantanam Erna, The Story of a Success, published 1917. My mom was born in 22, the year the state was founded. She died on the eve of the centenary of 1916. Strange. My dad was born in 1907. The year before this dream of Padraig Pearse was written in this book, which recounted 8 years of St. Anna's, the story of a success and the reinterpretation of education as the key to achieving a vision. So this is about a vision, and it's also about drama. There's a section that I couldn't find, I'm sitting there leafing through, still can't find it, which is a slightly malicious, at that time, I'm one for looking forward, I'm talking about visions, whereas 1916 is very much about looking back. I don't want to look back too much, but extract from that the power of vision and the clarity of vision, and how vision translates into drama, and drama translates into saga, and how the British should not forget to study drama and saga, because the old sagas, myths, archetypes re-emerge and will re-emerge. He's reminding them that the old archetype, an ancient archetype, will re-emerge. And for me, the theme of that archetype is freedom, and that the overreaching theme of this isn't nationalism, but freedom, and to, not to distinguish or not to confuse the two. This is the only vivid dream I have ever had since I used to dream of hobgoblins when I was a child. I remember telling it to my boys at a school meeting. This is the story of 8 years of the success of St. Anna's School. Started in 1908, private school in Irish for, so very much an emergence from the Celtic revival of that time. This is the only dream. He didn't remember his dreams, but he has this lucid dream, and here we found it on the page. I'm thinking, whoa, maybe hear this. For the power of vision, I've ever had since I used to dream of hobgoblins when I was a child. I remember telling it to my boys at a school meeting a few days later, and there's there speculating as to which of them I had seen in my dream. A secret which I do not think I gave away. But what recurs to me now is that when I said that I could not wish for any of them a happier destiny than to die thus in the defense of some true thing, they did not seem in any way surprised, for it fitted in with all that we had been teaching them at St. Anna's. I do not mean that we have ever carried on anything like political or revolutionary propaganda among the boys, but simply that we have always allowed them to feel that no one can finally live who hoards life too jealously. That one must be generous in service and without joyous accounting, and withal joyous accounting, even supreme sacrifices, slight. Okay. Blah, 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 blah. I'll just go back a tiny bit before the dream, okay? There's this most memorably made by Emmet when he mounted the scaffold in Thomas Street, smiling. He who had left so much, and most recently by those three who died at Manchester. When people say that Ireland will be happy when her mills throb and her harbours swarm with shipping, they are talking as foolishly as if they were to say of a lost saint or of an unhappy lover, that man will be happy again when he has a comfortable income. I know that Ireland will not be happy again until she recollects that old proud gesture of hers. And that laughing gesture of a young man that is going into battle or climbing to a gibbet. What I have just written has reminded me of a dream I had nearly 4 years ago. I dreamt that I saw a pupil of mine, one of our boys at St. Enda's, standing alone upon a platform above a mighty sea of people. And I understood that he was about to die there for some august cause, Ireland's or another. He looked extraordinarily proud and joyous, lifting his head with a smile almost of amusement. I remember noticing his bare white throat and the hair on his forehead stirred by the wind, just as I had often noticed them on the hurling field. I felt an inexplicable exhilaration as I looked on him, and this exhilaration was heightened rather than diminished by my consciousness that the great silent crowd regarded the boy with pity and wonder rather than with approval, as a fool who was throwing away his life rather than a martyr that was doing his duty. It would have been so easy to die before an applauding crowd or before a hostile crowd, but to die before that silent, unsympathetic crowd. I dreamt then that another of my pupils stepped upon the scaffold and embraced his comrade, and that then he tied a white bandage over the boy's eyes as though he would resent the hangman doing him that kindly office. And this act seemed to me to symbolize an immense brotherly charity and loyalty, and to be the compensation to the boy that died for the indifference of the crowd.
Så man glir ni för jag blir finishless.
Thank you. I read this last week, but I had to change the end. So the ending is different. I entitled it Insurrection, and it's essentially about the First World War. I mentioned one thing in it, the Angel Mons. This was a fiction, a story that was invented to show how victorious England is going to be in the war against Germany. And it was about an angel who was supposed to have been seen leading British soldiers into battle, and they could not be defeated because of this. And it was purely and simply fiction. this is what the whole thing is about. The Empire was in a terrible war. In the Western Front, the Germans showed no fear. England's propagandists revealed the tale of the Angel of Mons, claiming the Germans had no response. Volunteers in Dublin occupied the GPO with Mauser rifles, returned blow for blow. From Elm Street Bridge to Stevens Green, the effect of those riflemen could be heard and seen. They fought not for an emperor's ransom or some ignoble prince's crown, but for the rights of man and the abolition of hunger of the damned. Thank you.
Residency work in progress. Who the fuck am I? Who the fuck are you?
Short and sweet. Carol McCartan, all of them.
Present and fallen. How far must we fall because our brains are too big and our hearts are too small? The free-falling and present can land softly. Recognition of descent from a height gives the body the opportunity to adapt, to bring a little bounce to the knees and give in the feet before landing. A landing in which the body has escaped pain allows for immediacy and further movement. Cats do this. Cats survive. Cats are little, but I have never heard a cat described as brittle. They take off and land, take off and land. All day, all day. As we do in our way. The body rigid suffers breakages on impact. Failure to act on the freedom to be flexible is an act of choice in favor of rigidity. Once the choice is made, it is honored. Rigidity returns to rigidity in paralysis. These are house rules. The mind also lives in this house. New and varied experience liberates the mind from the conditioning of experience past. The past gives rigidity to the walls of circumstance, and the mind, body, and spirit can transcend these walls. It will never be known if there is anything that a human cannot do. Facilitators of the transcending of these walls are worthy of support. This is not socialism. It is no further to the left nor the right, forwards nor backwards, up nor down. These labels are rooted in a past that has died, are limiting and dangerous. They give the impression that we know things, when the only saving grace in being human is that we do not know anything.
Speaking of language, before I introduce Gabriella, I happened to meet her last week, and there is something very lovely about meeting somebody who's not Irish, who has a great passion for the Irish language. And she told me how she was searching for Irish lessons, and they were quite expensive, so I said, look, I'll teach a bit of Irish, and she put her hand straight out and said, we have a deal. And she had a lot more phrases than a lot of Irish people I know, so Gabriella, we're ready for you.
I said, when to say that, I still remember the expression you told me. If I'm correct, the expression is ex nov in agne tanta, which means swimming against the tide or something like that. I still remember. Okay. And I still remember that old veal means from the mouth.
Okay, there we go.
Okay. So I was about to read a W. Yeats poem, and then another presentation made me think about, okay, this is a cultural exchange, so maybe W.B. Yeats will have to forgive me for tonight, because I wanted to share as well a folk song from my country, if that's okay, unless you prefer the W.B. Yeats.
No.
Okay. Okay, this song is about... Okay, this song is about, like, you know that Portugal is quite related, Portugal and Spain, quite related to the seas and discovery, so this song is about a sailor that goes to the high sea, and also song is about the sea. And so it oscillates between the description of the sailor in the high sea and the prayers that the sailor actually makes to the Holy Virgin, and that eventually promises the Holy Virgin that he wants to go home so he can marry the wife of his dream, and if he doesn't go home, he prefers to be buried among the tides of the sea. So it's a quite a mix of feelings of songs. I'm not a singer though, so, but it's just for sharing. The song translated is called Mar Português, that means Portuguese Sea, literally. Nasceu dia quando o vento engolia e o seu mar prolongava na morada de veleiro, no peito de marinheiro que estando triste cantava, que estando triste. E ai, que beleza tamanha, meu chão, meu monte, meu vale, de folhas, flores, frutas de ouro. Vê-se, vês, terras da Espanha, da sentido que aqui te foi. voleiro, volava outro marinheiro, que estando triste cantava, que estando triste cantava. E ai, que beleza tamanha, meu chão, meu monte, meu vale, de folhas flores, frutas de ouro. Vê-se, vês, terras de Espanha e areias de Portugal. E olhou-se a guinho de choro.
Just on time, but I'm going to squeeze one in if you don't mind there, guys. This is called In Our Nature. We are all woven to the globe we're in, mostly ocean, vast, so much so too much to grasp, so we float. Half in its life and half in our own complex, so much so too much to question, yet it brushes to our shores so simply like a soft bristled children's toothbrush aged 2 to 4 months. And you could nearly brush bare gums with clear lakes lapping onto wet stone, to be in the way of it while it asks you to close your eyes, while it might fall from such heights only to land thunderously in gushes. It will massage your muscles and they are soft, and your blood will flow with it, with clean skin separating nothing no more, absorbing the salts of the earth are your rich pores. We are all woven to the globe we're in, like trains from the station dipping in, emerging carriages from the earth's surface, and we weave with it in directions plenty, with the sun travelling in one ray each, not bending but spilling threads through parted clouds, sewing themselves to the ground and the surfaces of blackened glasses and the lips of smiles, with the recipe for life at the tip of each and every worn needle it strikes us softly with. If sound shot through in lines as fine and bright, I'd pierce a song through the clouds to you, muffled to those in shade, as they admire the view of you admiring the tune, and maybe dancing a bit too. If I could conduct the rain, that is, precise precipitation, my tool of percussion, with hands of my imagination deciding what beat will make you move. I am successful when you dance in the puddles of muck. To what we'd swear was silence, you'd swim in blues and rhythm. For it is in your nature to only grow among the globe that you are sown, till it lends your body back again, till you are but a beat of rain. Thank you.